I have a tendency that when things are going well in my life, I have a tendency to think that God is pleased with all of my actions. We've been taught this, right? Yeah, even from a little kid's age, right? Follow the rules and God will love you and everything will go well with your life. So when things are going well in our life, we say to ourselves, okay, especially if we have some things that we've changed in our life to start following God. So imagine, okay, I've started to read the Bible more, or I've started to pray more, I've been going to church more, and wow, you know, I'm seeing some wonderful fruits of this labor. We start thinking that the victories we have in life are corresponding to the fact that God is pleased with all of our actions. And this is what we see, especially in this. We're going to have some very uncomfortable times during this chapter as Samson is going to engage in activities that are not pleasing to God, but he still gets victory. Isn't that crazy? You can live in disobedience and still have victory. Does it make you uncomfortable at all? Because what we don't want is we don't want to say, oh, well, apparently it doesn't matter how I live. I can live any way I want, and God's either going to bless me or maybe even God's blessing is irrespective of how we act. And this is a dangerous thing. We know that when we live in God's obedience, things go or tend to go well for us in life. And when we live in disobedience and we don't follow God's commands or rules or plan or will for our life, things tend to go bad. But it's not, again, a one-to-one correlation. This is something that the ancients have always wrestled with. Even today, we still struggle with this. I was just watching a commercial where it was having this, they're advertising a new network, it's like a preaching network. Apparently, I haven't quite figured it out, but they have this person is speaking, and she's saying how, yes, if you follow God's rules and God's law, you will be doubly blessed your entire life. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, the problem comes in when we are living not honorable lives and God still gives us victory, or we choose poor paths and somehow or other, it all seems to work out. This is the living out of the New Testament concept of all things work together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So that means you make a poor choice, you end up with a poor consequence here in this life, and somehow God will turn it around so it's a blessing. That this is a hard concept because we don't like to tell our youth that, because what's going to happen then? Are they going to just choose to live whatever lives they want? And, well, God's going to work it out in the end. Well, that could be a way to go, but you're going to end up, your road is going to be fraught with lots of problems, not the best choices. That's what we're going to see here with Samson and some of his choices. All right, Judges 14. We know all about his birth. That's what happened in Judges 13. And then we fast forward to Samson is now of age. And the hormones are raging. And all he can think about are girls. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. Right off the bat, we should start thinking to ourselves, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Are the Israelites and the Philistines copacetic? Are they friends? Are they foes? These are the sworn enemies of the Israelite nation. They had tons of problems with them. Of course, we got the David and Goliath story. It's going to happen years from now, but the Philistines were ones that the Israelite nation was very enamored with. They were constantly being drawn into this Philistine culture and their god Dagon. Just really, really problematic. This is the reason why God, again, at the very beginning said, when you enter this land, you need to say to the other religions that are there, this is God's land, time for you to exit stage left. And many a times they would say, no, we're going to stay and mingle with them. And this was, again, the starting of the process of the Philistine occupation, and they've been doing it for 40 years before Samson comes in, and God even says Samson's going to begin the process of defeating the Philistines. So how is God going to defeat the Philistines when the chosen judge has eyes chlorophyll is. This is a very Romeo, Juliet, you know, the forbidden fruit. You know, what do we tell teenagers? Don't date that girl. And what is the, yeah, that's who they want to, don't date that boy. He's bad for you. Oh, I love him even more. Oh my gosh. And you can imagine it. I actually do believe that as the years were happening, Samson's parents have been telling him, Samson, you're special, you're cool. God gave you to us miraculously, and an angel came, and you're a Nazarite, and you're set apart, and you're consecrated, and you're holy, and you're going to help us defeat the Philistines. They're the bad people. Oh, the Philistines are the bad people? Wow, she's cute. Yeah. Don't do it, Samson. And then he wants it all the more. You can have any fruit in the entire garden. Anything you want. Just not that one right there. Oh. What is wrong with us? Huh? What is wrong with us? Okay. Oh, that was verse 1. Cool. Verse 1. Saw the young Philistine woman. So he comes back. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. That's my interpretation of it. Isn't this great? Daddy, I want a squirrel. Not just any squirrel. I want that squirrel. We don't know how old he is. I mean, he's of age. I mean, he could be 18. He could be, usually around 18 would be the time you're going to start doing this, would be my guess. But yeah, the hormones are raging, and he's like, he sees, and everything in this whole section is all based on looks. And that's part of the issue that the writer of Judges is trying to point out, that we often base our choices, especially when it comes to dating, solely on looks. And there's a danger to it. Now, is it a bad thing per se? No. But if the only reason why you're choosing a dating partner is because of their looks, you might have problems. So get her for me as my wife. His father and his mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives? Your sister, perhaps. No. No, not that type of relative. Come on. Yeah, you could date your second cousin. Have you ever heard the story? Heather was flirting with, who was? Was he her second cousin? JD. Yeah, so she's flirting with this guy at a volleyball match, and they're all, oh, this is cute, right? And so she's like, oh, hey, can I have your phone number? And he's like, hey, sure. Oh, he asked you first? My apologies. I always get these mixed up. And so he writes down his name. Now, if you don't know, Heather's maiden name is Heather Winnikin. That's her maiden name. And so he starts writing down J.D. Winnikin. And his phone number, hands it to her, and she's like, oh, ghost white. I don't think we should date. Though I guess you don't have to change your last name or anything. So it's not that. It's, you know, actually, but you could date your second cousin. You won't have three eyeballs. It's all good. It's all good. Come on, really? Isn't there someone around us, again, of all the people that, you know, why the Philistines? Why them? And it's, again, I think it's a lot about this forbidden fruit. It's all about looks. Please choose someone. Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get away? Uncircumcised means not in the covenant relationship with God. So there are people that are in the covenant relationship with God. Why would you choose someone outside of that covenant relationship? We've talked about how it's more difficult to bring someone. Evangelism by dating is never a good thing. It does work. I have seen it work. It's just not the best idea. And that's what he's trying to say. Please, is there anyone else? There's a lot of fish in the sea. Samson said to his father, I think it, insert foot stomp here. Get her for me. She's the right one for me. Now, I am personally a proponent of arranged marriages. I think arranged marriages are great. It's not the worst idea in the world. It's worked for years. Now, it was very interesting because I saw, I don't think it was PBS, but it was something special. And it was about arranged marriages. And one of the things that they said, and I've actually talked to Jacob about this. I said, who knows you better than anyone? The parents, right? So you are looking with different sets of eyeballs we can help you because we're not emotionally invested in this choice.
If you're both Christians, you want to be like Jesus, right. So everything
should work. Everything, yeah, I'm telling you, I think there's something to this. So if anyone wants, I mean, we're willing to pay a dowry for Jacob. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm sorry, it's the other way around. We are now accepting dowry offers. Yes, thank you, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, you're willing to pay. I get all your money. Now, this is an important thing because I take chickens, cows, especially if they're barbecued. Yeah, I'm all good for that. Yeah, crock pot, I'm good with that. This is one of those things that, obviously I'm not a proponent of arranged marriages, but I will say this. I don't remember ever listening to my parents about their advice of my dating life. Now, granted, I never asked my dad, in fact, when I'd bring a girl home, it would take him like 2 years before he figured out their name because he just like really didn't care. I dated Heather and I'd bring her home like, who's this girl? I'm like, it's the same girl, Dad, same girl. We often don't go to our parents for dating thing, but have we ever stopped to think that maybe our parents know a little bit more than us? Oh, I'm throwing it out there. Some men marry women like their mom. Yeah, Samson's not doing that. Like, yeah, the unnamed righteous woman of God, and here's unnamed Philistine, she's not circumcised, part of the non-covenant relationship with God, yeah. And apparently, and the way that the Hebrew is constructed is, it's solely, she's just good looking, that's it. She's hot, and that's it, right? And again, it's not, I want to date her, why? She's hot, so is hell. Doesn't mean I want to go there. It's okay to date hot women. I dated a hot woman, and then I married her. Thank you. That's good. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. All right, we're going to keep going. Get her for me. She's the right one. And then there's this parenthetical sentence that's going to bug you. You're not going to like this sentence. His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Now, on the surface, what it kind of sounds like is God may ask you to sin in order to accomplish his will. Is that a true statement? Will God ever ask you to sin in order to accomplish his will? No, God can't. I mean, it's against God's character. He can't do that. But is it true that God can take your horrendously poor choices and use it for his purposes? Yeah, so that one we're comfortable with. I mean, we see that all throughout Scripture, God over and over again says, you people are a train wreck, but I'm not just going to discard you with the trash. But this is where it gets a little dicey, because here he is pursuing someone that is not good for him, and God says, you are doing this in spite of solid parental instruction and solid instruction from God himself. And he says, you might end up with some really negative consequences, but I'll still use it for my good. A teenage girl gets pregnant and raises a child up, and this child becomes a very faith-filled, godly person. Does the blessing of a child growing up in the faith and doing well in life, does that then honor the sin of sex outside of marriage? No. Did you see what's going on here? This is where it gets dangerous, because Samson's going to be experiencing these victories after making poor choices. I think it would be easy to come to the conclusion, wow, I make a poor choice, but God still blesses it. I think I'll still make some poor choices. Never confuse victory in life with God's approval. In fact, don't pursue victory, pursue godliness. That is the way to do it. Sometimes we're like, we just want life to be good. I just want to be, used by God. I just want to have some victory and some successes in my life. I want to be able to date and marry and have a good job. And those are honorable pursuits in some respect. But there is a pursuit that is way better, which is, I wish to be the right person. As they've said, it doesn't matter if you win or lose. It's how you play the game. The concept behind it and why we tell our little leaguers and soccer stars and ballerinas this is because we want them to see that winning is not the most important thing. Finding victory in life is not the most important thing. How you accomplish it is really, really important. And I just saw it on Facebook recently. It's going around. A son asked his mother, you know, how do I find the right woman to marry? And the mom says, don't find the right woman to marry. Be the right man to marry. And I'm like, this is what we're talking about here. So yes, grace, because God can take your stupid choices and turn them into good, but that does not give us the license to then pursue the poor choices. Am I clear on that? Does it make sense? Okay, yeah. This is huge. All right, verse 5. So Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, which is a problem, is Samson supposed to be hanging out in vineyards? Right, yeah, it was pointed out, it's a vineyard. Why, who would care about that it's a vineyard? The reason why that's important is Samson's not supposed to be in a vineyard. His mom's not supposed to be in a vineyard. They're supposed to be staying away from anything that is grape-related. No peanut butter and grape jelly sandwiches. No raisin bran. No wine coolers. Okay? Stay away from them. But here he is in this vineyard. And as they approached it, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward him. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. I've never torn a young goat, but apparently it's easy, right? I guess, comparatively, you know, tearing a young goat apart, yeah, it's just going to sit there and you're ripping it apart and it's going, where a lion is going to try and eat you back, right? Okay, so I guess I could see this. Now, this is important because it's going to come up later. This is super important. Your image of Samson is wrong. I do not believe that Samson is physically muscular. That's my belief. I'm going to back this up later on in a couple of, well, like 4 weeks from now. I'm going to show you that there, this crazy chick that becomes Samson's wife is always asking, what's the source of your strength? Right? And the Philistines are saying, hey, what's the source of his strength? The response back is not, I've got huge muscles. I work out. No, it's this special power of strength that Samson has is a gifting that happens when the Spirit comes upon him. So I believe that Samson is not naturally a strong person. So that's the reason why you could imagine you're walking through the vineyard, out pops a lion. It's a cultural hazard. Back in those days, lions just might pop out and eat you. And the thing comes, and the Spirit comes upon him, he grabs it, and he just rips it apart. Yeah, it's crazy. This is telling us a couple of things. It's going to, first of all, set up a story that's going to be germane here in the rest of the chapter. But secondly, again, setting up the concept that he has supernatural strength, but only when God gives it to him. Otherwise, I think he probably looks a lot like me, okay? Like, that guy doesn't look strong at all. You're right. But he told neither, so yeah, as he might have torn a young goat, but he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. That comes into play later on too. Then he went down and talked with the woman and he liked her. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. So status update, like, yeah. And he liked her. Philistine woman from Timnah, like. Isn't it like it's not really official until it's Facebook official? I think something like that. I'm so glad I don't have to date. It's crazy. You're confused, yes. Oh, yep. Yeah, something happened with the parents. I don't know if maybe they, you know, maybe mom and dad are like, that's a vineyard. Honey, don't go in the vineyard. We'll meet you on the other side. Stupid kid, right? Yeah, like a kid. I want to jump off a 30-foot cliff into the ocean. We'll meet you down there. Yeah, you shouldn't do that. You're going to die. So I think that's what it is, because it comes later in the story of his parents did not witness the events, and it becomes germane later on in the story. Okay. He likes her. I like the woman. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, so I don't know how the courting process went, but hey, I'm Samson. Sometimes God comes upon me and I have super strength, and yeah, I tear lions apart. That would be a great pickup line. I tear lions apart with my bare hands like I tore a young goat the other day. Dude, if you make that a pickup line, Jacob, I'll give you $20, man. That's brilliant. So, what? Writing it down now. Sometime later, when he went back to Mary, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. This is where the story comes in. The lion's carcass. In it was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands, which he really isn't supposed to, right? Because not only is he supposed to stay away from vineyards, but the other thing is he's not supposed to be touching these dead animals unless he's going to like eat like for sacrificial purpose. Yeah, so he really shouldn't have been, anyway, scooping up honey. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it, but he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now his father went down to see the woman. Yeah, so daddy's going to go check out this young lady, right? Dads have a tendency to do that. I feel bad for Jacob. I'm sorry, I'm your father. Yeah. And Samson made a feast there, as was customary for bridegrooms. So the idea is the wedding is about to happen. Isn't this great? The party is about to begin. There's bridegrooms. And when he appeared, he was given 30 companions. That's not like female companions. He was given 30 groomsmen. I've been to weddings that had like 8 groomsmen and 8 bridesmaids. 30. Could you imagine the tuxedo rental cost? It's high. And it would be high back then because they had the same sort of thing that when you went to a wedding, you had to have the proper clothing. This is really important. It comes into the story too. So he's given 30 guys and he somehow needs to provide some clothing for these guys. Now check this out. Samson's a little crafty. He says, let me tell you a riddle, Samson said to them. If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. So I'm going to give you a riddle. And if you can solve the riddle, then I will give you 30 brand new pairs of clothes. Now again, clothes was not popular back then, right? You had maybe 2 pairs of clothes. One you wore and one you washed, and that was it. You didn't have a closet full. You didn't have winter clothes and summer clothes. There weren't sales at Macy's or anything like that. This would be a significant amount of money. So he says, if you solve it, then if you can't tell me, then you need to give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. So the tale has been set. And again, riddle is not, it'd be like a, I don't know, it's weird. We don't really have anything like this. Anyway, tell us your riddle, he said. Let's hear it. They're like, bet's on, we're good. Let's go for it. He replied, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. What is this in reference to? The lion. Yeah, so you know, we know the story. The Philistine companions, they don't know the story. And so, if I would have just said this as a riddle to you right from the beginning, would you have even thought a lion that's a lion carcass that's dead and has bees that are producing honey in it? Yeah, this is odd and bizarre. So these guys are freaking out because it says for 3 days they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, you can't get the answer out of the man, go to the woman. They said to Samson's wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. This is great, yeah. Pulls the woman aside. We're going to kill you. So you figure, you go ask your husband. She's like, no, I love him. We're going to burn your house down. Okay. That's about how it went here.
Did you invite us here to rob us? I love this. Then Samson's wife. I want to be very careful about what I say about women here. Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, "You hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, but you haven't told me the answer. If you really loved me, you would tell me." Right, this is... Yeah, I'm watching my words. All of you... He says that with his wife not here.
Bob Kessler said, typical.
That's for the recording. Yeah. This includes guys, but guys and gals, your relationship with your significant other is not supposed to be based upon manipulation, bribery with love. I will do this for you if you do this for me. Right? And again, it even starts with the dating, right? I know this is the reason why it's tough even now dating. Guy takes a girl out, pays for dinner. Is he manipulating the situation because he wants something afterwards? Which is why I know a lot of girls are like, we're going Dutch for a while because we're not going to be using each other in that way. Girls, you know, do you want something? And so you pout and sob until you get your way, and it is not a genuine response from your man. It is a manipulated response because he just doesn't want to see you cry anymore. We're laughing a lot over here. all right. I must have hit something. We do not manipulate one another with our love. We don't say things like this. Also, out of curiosity, does this story sound familiar at all? We haven't hit it yet. We're still two chapters away. But later on, Samson's going to marry another woman named Delilah, and she does the exact same thing. If I were Samson's dad, I'd be like, Samson, we need to talk about your choice in girls. You seem to find the ones that are very manipulative, right? There comes a point when you put the manipulate, because relationships are not based on manipulation, right? Is our relationship with God based on manipulation? No, it's based upon his total act of grace, giving us forgiveness for stuff we don't deserve forgiveness for, but he doesn't do it to say, well, I'll forgive you if you just do this for me. God, that's an abusive relationship. Well, abusive is a strong word. It can turn into a very abusive relationship. And hopefully that's not our relationship with God. God, I'll do this for you if you do this for me. Relationships are not quid pro quo, right? And it's tough because we kind of think that way. With my wife and I, when we give each other massage, so my wife, like, honey, can I have a neck rub? And I'm thinking to myself, ooh, if I give her a neck rub, then she'll give me a neck rub, right? This is how it works, right? So I'm like, I'm going to give her a neck rub, and I'm thinking to myself, the longer I do this, the longer is my neck rub, right? Because isn't that, if I give you a 20-minute neck rub, you have to give me two. So I give it, and of course, then after the end, she's like total jello, and she's like, ah, and I'm like, hey, honey, my turn. And she's like, ah. Okay, I'm done. Yeah, and I do the same thing to her, right? If she gives me a neck rub, I'm like Mr. Jellyman, and I try to get in. It's just, that's not how relationships are supposed to be based. Relationships are based on love, and when it works properly, if I love my wife, not in a way to get something back, and she loves me in the way not to get something back, both of our needs are met, right? But if my thing is I want you to do something for me and I don't think it's reciprocated, I might end up not giving as much to her. That's important. All right. So she's crying. You don't love me no more, Samson. And Samson, in this young relationship, tries to be logical with this emotional female. I haven't explained it to my father or mother, so why should I explain it to you, right? This is logic. Or this is why that was part of the story. I ain't told my folks. Why would I tell you? And of course, the response would be, but I'm going to be your wife, and you're your parents, and you got to tell. Right, this is how it's supposed to be, right? And that's what it says. She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. Guys, would you have given in? After 7 days, you're like, maybe I need to do something. Again, this is not the way you should do a relationship. She cried the whole time. So on the seventh day, he finally, I can't handle it no more. Honey, I do love you, I'll tell you. And so he finally told her because she continued to press him. She in turn, like, she's telling him the riddle and she's like, honey, I got to go to the grocery store real quick. I'll see you in just a moment. So she, because it's the seventh day. Now, granted, she's also been threatened with her life, so I'm going to maybe cut her a little slack. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town, she in turn explained the riddle to the people. So verse 18, before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, hey, we got an answer for your riddle. Because what's sweeter than honey, and what is stronger than a lion? What would Samson be thinking right about this point? That broad. And that's what he kind of says. Samson said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. Do we get that? He's not calling his wife a cow, right? Or his fiance a cow. He's saying, yeah, you got this through, and if you hadn't... And there's also an intimation of you are having sexual relations with my... And... There might be some truth to this, by the way, because of, I think it comes, is it the next? Oh, yeah, it's the next chapter. Samson's not happy about this prospect because he ends up not marrying this woman, and guess who she marries? The best man. Oh, yeah, so there might be something to this. Someone is plowing with this heifer, and so then verse 19, problematic. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. He went to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men. Do you love these? He goes to a neighboring town, Ashkelon. It's a Philistine stronghold. Kills 30 people, strips them of their own belongings, and gave their clothes to those who explained the riddle. So he's like, you want 30 clothes? I'll give you 30 clothes. He goes, kills 30 people, grabs their clothes. Here you go. There's your 30 pairs of clothes. And, it does explain on this one. And burning with anger, he went up to his father's house, and Samson's wife was given to the friend who had attended him at his wedding. Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, struck down the Philistines. What is God's ultimate end goal in this thing? It's the defeat of the Philistines. So this is important. This is only the beginning of it, and so that's why it seems to be in a smaller thing, is Samson's poor choices being validated and excused by God. No, we would not say that like God is happy with the choice. But God can take even our poor choices and make them work. You know, maybe we end up taking a job we should not have taken. Or go and attend a school we should not have taken. Or we choose a sinful path, and though somehow God is with us even while we are wandering away, and then somehow or other, like a bungee cord, we're brought back and God shows grace and love. He's never happy that the prodigal went to a foreign land and spent all his money in wild living. But God is always there with grace for those who come back. And he says, I've always been your father. I will always be your father. Ask yourself this question. If things are going well in your life, we might have a tendency to say God is just simply pleased with us. One of the hardest things to do is when things are going well, we say, are there still things in my life that I need to correct? Because often it's when things go bad, right? We lose our job, lose our spouse, we lose our health insurance, we lose our 401k. It's at that point we might say, gosh, maybe I'm not doing something right. Maybe God's not pleased with me. But very rarely do we ever stop in the middle of good times and say,
Am I living the way God wants me to live? Stop seeking victory and start living the way that God would want you to live. Stop being worried about successes here in life, because when you simply pursue God and what He wants for you, then everything will work out. I believe the way Jesus said it was, seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these other things are going to start working themselves out. When things start working out, don't ever stop examining yourself, saying, Lord, search me. Help me see where I am still failing. Don't ever excuse my bad behavior, but please forgive me, because I'm not always living for you. And I don't care how good you are, there is a little bit of Samson in all of us. And we are always in need of God's eternal grace. And God is not sitting up there saying, get your act together and I'll start blessing you. That is a lie. God says, I love you. I may not like what you're doing in life and you're experiencing negative consequences, but my grace is going to be sufficient for everything that's going on in your life. But don't let us ever use that as an excuse. Instead, we live our lives in thankfulness back to God. Let's pray. Lord, it's